Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 4th of July. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Michael Turner and Lorna Chorley, and I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. And your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
There are just the three of us today. The main headlines this week are, "You're making a huge mistake over parking," £400,000 secures future of Hat Fair, and "Royal couple light up the cathedral." So, here is the first of the headlines. "You're making a huge mistake over parking. The town forum told they don't build on Cattle Market." Planners have been warned that they will make a huge mistake if they build an out-of-town car park. Residents in Winchester have aired concerns as civic chiefs draw up plans for the revamp of the station approach area, stretching from the railway station to Andover Road. Several ideas have been suggested, including building offices and homes on the Cattle Market car park and putting extra layers on the Gladstone Street car park. But resident Steve Harborn of the Worthy Road Residents Group told the Town Forum, "We think that is a huge mistake. The Cattle Market is a valuable asset for Winchester." Mr. Harborn of Worthy Lane said it limits congestion as motorists park before the congested Andover Road, City Road, Stockbridge Road junctions. He added, "The impression is that this is a done deal, that all we can do is make representations about the fine detail." Mr. Harborn said the city had enough empty offices without adding more. "Existing space should be modernised," he said. Steve Tilbury, the City Council's corporate director, told the forum the council had commissioned a general study into the area by consultants Tibbalds, and it was due to report soon. Tibbalds would consult local stakeholders such as landowners, councillors, WINAC, and the City of Winchester Trust later this month. Mr. Tilbury said of the Tibbalds' work, "It's not about development proposals, it's about context of the area and what needs to be done in order to make development work. There's not a widespread public consultation at the moment because there are no proposals on which to consult. But crucial decisions will be made in the autumn when councillors consider Local Plan Part 2, which will propose major sites for development. The draft is due to go out on to public consultation in September-October. Architect Paul Bulkley of Winchester-based Snug Projects, based on Andover Road, has long suggested the station approach area for redevelopment. He also told the forum that the City Council should consider extending the settlement boundary to make it easier to build on countryside. Senior planner Steve Opachik has said, "Winchester does not need to expand outwards," but Mr. Bulkley expressed doubts. Major infill scheme proposals were seeing fewer homes. Silver Hill currently proposes 180 instead of 300. The police headquarters 150, down from 197. And the North Walls Fire Station 16, down from 45. Providing the 40% affordable housing was becoming unviable in cities, but much easier on greenfield sites, he argued. He said, "It's time to forget the planner's black line on the map and look for land on a case-by-case basis." Mr. Bulkley warned that if insufficient homes were built within the city, then in about 10 years developers would start winning major appeals for greenfield development. "People are beginning to realise that it's better to plan and have control than not plan and lose control." He said now is a crucial point because the Local Plan Part 2 is due to be set in stone in 2015.
£400,000 secures future of Hat Fair. Arts Council grant welcomed on eve of event. The future of Winchester's Hat Fair has been secured for another 3 years. On the eve of the popular street festival, which takes place this weekend, its organisers, Winchester Theatre Royal, learned it will receive £400,000 in Arts Council funding for the event between 2015 and 2018. Theatre Royal director Mark Curtis called the grant a vote of confidence in the festival, which attracts 40,000 people a year. He said, "We are absolutely delighted. It is a vote of confidence in our ability to run Hat Fair and secures its future. We have invested a lot of time and effort into something we care about very much. And it is a really good feeling that we are going to be able to carry on running the festival." The theatre took over management of Hat Fair in February 2013, after months of negotiations, pledging to keep it on the streets of Winchester, after the festival suffered a heavy financial blow in 2012 due to bad weather. The money is split into around £130,000 per year and can only be used for the festival, which brings a variety of street theatre, comedy, dance and more to the city's streets. Theatre Royal will receive the same amount in grants as it has the previous 2 years, and Mr. Curtis said the security of funding meant they could plan for bigger and better attractions. He said, "The thing about having a grant organised in advance is that it means we can plan and develop all the things we want to do, and the possibilities that funding opens up are very exciting. It means we can just get on with planning rather than worrying about where the money will come from." This year's event, which has a South American theme, begins tomorrow, Friday, and involves a record 45 companies with 12 new commissions and 4 UK premieres.
And of course, that's today, Friday, and they're all getting ready for it in the middle of Winchester at the moment.
Royal couple light up the cathedral. Winchester Cathedral played host to its patron, the Earl of Wessex, during a day-long tour of Hampshire last week. Prince Edward, who has been supporting the cathedral's £19.5 million capital project appeal, and his wife Sophie, were greeted by members of the clergy and cathedral officials last Friday. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, the Bishop of Winchester, said, "I'm delighted that he's come and shown his commitment to the cathedral and its restoration and development. The work is going on at the cathedral will help so many more people understand the place much better. It's a great place for families to come in terms of discovery of the history and obviously the religion, and to find out what Christianity is about. It's a wonderful place that tells a great story." The royal couple were introduced to a group of Year 6 children from Western Primary School who were taking part in a workshop about the story of William Walker, the diver, who effectively saved a sinking Winchester Cathedral from collapse in the early part of the 20th century by shoring up the concrete, the southern end of the east and eastern sides of the cathedral. The pupils have been learning about Walker's exploits from their teacher, Sue Fear. Later, the royal couple watched the choristers rehearsing for weekend services and were shown the 12th century Winchester Bible and the Morley Library. The Very Reverend James Atwell, Dean of Winchester, said, "It's the boost and encouragement that a royal visit brings. It's lovely for the cathedral to host its patron. It's a partnership between volunteers and those who work here, and it does buck everybody up. It gives them a bit of a fizz. They'll feel affirmed and appreciated. He's our royal patron, and it's great to have him coming in and taking interest, and I'm excited that we can take him to the new learning centre where there's real progress." And there's a variety of photographs of this. There's a picture of the couple at Western Primary School listening to a lesson and also talking to the choristers in the cathedral.
Now we have the death notices. Alan, Doris Alan, at Flower Down Nursing Home, aged 85. Cabell, Joan Cabell, former postmistress of West Hill Post Office, Romsey Road, Winchester, at Cam's Ridge Care Home, Fareham, aged 92. Carmen, Peter Carmen, at North Hampshire Hospital, aged 78. Clark, Monica Clark, former swimming teacher in the Winchester area, aged 83. Danby, Raymond Danby. Hedges, John Hedges, suddenly at his home in Yeovil. Latcham, Sally Latcham, unexpectedly, aged 51. McCarthy, Michael Mac McCarthy, peacefully, aged 78. Renwick, or Renwick, Barbara Babs Renwick, at her home in Meanstoke, after a long and courageous battle against cancer. Smirk, Audrey Smirk, of Chandler's Ford, aged 87. And finally, Snell, Joyce Snell, suddenly. And now we'll ask Daphne to give us Christian comment, please.
And this comes from Rosemary A. Baker. My plans to ask to sit down as a sector minister. Last Sunday at the Methodist Conference, the yearly ceremony of ordaining ministers and deacons took place at various venues around Birmingham. It is also, therefore, the anniversary of ordination of all ministers and deacons in the Methodist Church of Great Britain. It was 16 years ago that I was ordained as a presbyter, working in the sector of mental illness and learning disability, and attached to the Winchester Methodist Circuit. Whilst still in training, I was asked to take on the pastoral oversight of the church in King's Somborne, and have been doing it ever since. I have decided, because of circuit changes and my age, to step down from this responsibility this summer, and will ask at next year's conference if I can sit down, i.e. retire, as a sector minister. I will, of course, go on as a retired minister, taking occasional services. Word has got out in King's Somborne that I am changing my role, and so I have been interviewed for the parish magazine, The Gauntlet. It was an interesting task to reflect on my years ministering there, the highs and lows, particularly as I have just been to my 40th reunion in Scotland of my graduation as a doctor, and it will be my 30th year as a consultant psychiatrist next year. So there have been lots of opportunities for reflection and comparing and contrasting my two roles. I was discussing this article with a friend, and she said, "Why on earth do people get ordained? They put themselves forward because they believe they have been called by God to do this work. This call is then tested by the church, and if they are convinced the individual is called, and they are considered worthy, they go forward for ordination. There are a number of hoops to jump through and committees to go before as part of the process. I was turned down the first time, but still felt called, and went through the long drawn-out process a second time and was successful. Perhaps they couldn't face me going through it again, as I had felt a similar call to be a psychiatrist, but only passed my exams at the third attempt. There were a few problems about me being a woman, but principally it was to do with me being a psychiatrist and someone having had a bad experience. Endurance is something that our newly ordained ministers and deacons will find they need, not just in getting there, but throughout their ministry. But it is worth it." And that comes from Rosemary A. Baker.
There are 9 letters this week, and so, Brian, could we please have the first?
Yes, and that's from Councillor Victoria Weston. Get an informed view of Silver Hill. A recent campaign has stirred up much anxiety about proposals for the regeneration of Silver Hill in the heart of Winchester. Local councillors have received many letters from concerned members of the public. From these letters, it seems the public have been given the wrong impression of what is proposed for the area. In reality, there are plans coming forward to the council's cabinet meeting next week, which show just how the scheme's architects have responded to the issues raised in response to earlier plans. A group of councillors have been working hard with architects and developers to get the improvements Winchester wants and deserves. The design is based on the city's historic street patterns, with the highest quality of materials to make the public spaces attractive, including bringing the city's brooks back to life. There will be new public squares with art at the heart. The design is not monolithic. Buildings within each of the blocks will vary in height, in design, and in varied materials used: flint, brick and stone, not concrete. There will be shops, and there is demand from the new retailers to fill these shops. They will complement, not distract, from the high street. The council has been given a very clear professional advice, on which is on its website. I would urge the public to find out for themselves what Silver Hill can offer. The council's website has details. We've just published a report which explains in detail what is proposed, and there will be a public exhibition over the weekend of July the 12th, 13th. It is for the council's planning committee to decide whether this is a scheme fit for Winchester. I urge all concerned to examine the details of what's coming forward and take an informed view. And that's from Councillor Victoria Weston, Deputy Leader and Portfolio Holder for Built Environment for Winchester City Council.
And here's a letter from Disillusioned of Alton, name and address supplied, about the look of the City of Winchester. It's too late to save, Winchester is the heading. Sir, I was born in Winchester in 1941 and lived there until I was married in the 1970s and moved to Alton. I remember the old Winchester when the Silver Hill area was full of tatty old lock-ups, the slaughterhouse was there, the Brooks was full of Victorian terraced substandard cottages, but it had vibrancy. I haven't been to Winchester for several years, but was tempted to visit by the Grayson Perry mural. It was a lovely sunny day, so I saw Winchester at what should have been its best. I think I now look at Winchester through a tourist's eyes. High Street and towards the cathedral, still lovely. The rest of Winchester, appalling. Jury Street, ugly. City Road, ugly. St George's Street, ugly, ugly, ugly. The surface car parks in the Brooks area give a strong impression that land has just been cleared of old housing and the car parking is there as a temporary measure before redevelopment. That's probably right. Why, at the time this area was cleared of the old Victorian houses, didn't they replace them with new houses? Cars should not rule. What has happened to the old Victorian villas that were opposite the bus stops in City Road? Gone. I'm afraid Winchester went wrong years ago. Why not a rule? No new shops until the ones we have are 100% full. Why not put some houses back in? Go and look at Chichester and see how a city can cope with the car and live in the modern age without having to be torn down and ruined. But I think we have to face up to the fact that it's too late, says Disillusioned of Alton.
The next letter comes from Shirley Leslie, and the heading is Time for Answers from the Council. Sir, I sometimes feel there is a collective madness and lack of priority in the Winchester Planning Department. Every week there are numerous applications for trivial work to residents to trim 1 or 2 metres from overgrown trees or to remove weed trees like sycamore and ash, and yet the large developers seem to be able to act with impunity. Why was there no open competition for the whole Friars Gate area to obtain the best possible development worthy of one of England's greatest ancient cities? Why were plans for overbearing high blocks allowed? I noticed at various early consultation exhibitions that the new buildings were never shown actually alongside existing buildings in the High Street to give some idea of scale. Why are developers allowed to change original requirements for such essentials as a conveniently sited bus station and affordable housing? And then again, whoever thought it a clever idea to divert a straight Roman Andover road on a circuitous route through the middle of a housing estate with parking, local traffic and children to be negotiated? This whole affair brings all political parties into disrepute, as none of them have grasped the weight of public revulsion against present plans. It is time our councillors gave us answers to our complaints. And that comes from Shirley Leslie, Constable's Gate, Winchester.
Now here's a congratulatory letter, actually, from Jeff Ward. Road disruption was well worth it. Sir, once again the complainers are at it. Roadworks lead to traffic chaos in the Chronicle, June the 26th. The Stanmore Lane junction was improved, and it is a great improvement, primarily as it is resulting of campaigning by, among others, people living in Oliver's Battery Road North, who seem to feel they're the only people in the area that are affected by occurrences such as this. It's also inconveniencing hundreds of people who live and travel through Stanmore during the course of a day. Did they expect a job like that to be completed in a day? If you close a junction for upgrading, there's bound to be some disruption. As someone not from Oliver's Battery Road North, who uses that junction every day, it was an inconvenience having to detour around the Stanmore estate, but it was well worth it. As far as I could see, at no time was Oliver's Battery Road North closed, and it was perfectly possible to use the other junctions, i.e. Drayton Street, Battery Hill, etc., to reach Romsey Road. The long-term solution to any issue here is obvious. Open the previously closed junction with Badger Farm Road. And that's from Jeff Ward, Walton Place, Winchester.
And now we have a letter from Douglas Patterson, the chairman of Keep Hampshire Green, entitled Planners Have Protected Us from Speculative Development. And there is a picture of wind turbines. Sir, it's a pity we can't debate solutions to global warming in a planning hearing, as J.J. Heath Caldwell says, Chronicle Letters, June the 26th. But a planning hearing is about planning matters. That is what our planners and most of our councillors focused on, and their integrity has protected our heritage from two pointless, opportunistic wind farms which would have been monuments to folly and greed. The elephant in the room was the naive and misconceived EU policy on renewables targets, now widely considered a disaster. Intermittent renewables have driven up costs, undermined the economics of the electricity market, reduced security of supply, and had almost no impact on carbon emissions across Europe. We have been fiddling while Rome burns. Nevertheless, the UK already has more than enough consented renewable electricity capacity to meet our targets for 2020. Energy companies bully us with their quack remedies for global warming because it allows them to access the subsidy pot. The wind industry tells us wind is the cheapest form of renewable energy. It is not. It is the cheapest way for them to harvest the subsidies, and that is very different. Thankfully, there is policy change in the pipeline, and soon countries will be free to reduce carbon emissions in the most effective way possible, such as switching away from coal to gas, to nuclear and appropriate renewables. In the meantime, the best we can do is to limit the damage caused by speculative development, and that is what our planning committees did for us last week. Blinded by moral panic, some people still think we should allow the likes of EDF and TCI Renewables to erect these totem poles of environmental concern in ridiculous places, doing little more than enriching a few wealthy landowners, energy corporations, and financial speculators. If the projected £7.5 billion a year UK renewals subsidy was instead granted to our scientists for research, we might have a safe, clean thorium generator in every town sooner than we think. Douglas Patterson, Chairman of Keep Hampshire Green.
And now on the same theme, a letter from Judith Martin, headed Committee's Decision Has Helped Bury Onshore Wind Farms. Sir, what a shame that, with the honourable exception of Councillor Sam Newman Mackay, the Lib Dem members of the Planning Committee who helped reject the wind farm application hadn't read their own party news. Less than 3 months ago, the Lib Dem website stated proudly, "Nick Clegg blocks Tory wind farm ban." It went on to say, "Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg has blocked a Conservative plan to cap onshore wind generation, but he refused to allow the Tories to move the goalposts on green energy again. In practical terms, that would have meant no new onshore wind projects would have been supported by the government." Perhaps our councillors saw the date of the news item, April the 1st, and assumed that going against Tory policy was just an April fool. Winchester has helped move the goalposts offshore, where they will be sunk by the additional costs. There are Lib Dem councillors as appalled by this decision as I am, but they are not on the planning committee. And while Ed Miliband says, "I don't think we should say no more onshore wind," Labour has no presence on the planning committee at all. As for the other opposition to the application, would the Council for the Protection of Rural England, which tried nobly to stop Barton Farm being built on, really rather have fracking installations in each rural ward or a nuclear power station on their green and pleasant land? But I forget. Our planning controls will mean these are now entirely safe and accidents never happen, as Windscale, Fukushima, Chernobyl and various US states can attest. And that comes from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And A. Welsh writes, "Veterans deserve better than this. Sir, I followed the D-Day celebrations quite keenly. My father served primarily in Burma with the forgotten 14th Army. Should not they be remembered in the same way? As many of the veterans wore decorations, I asked my father why there was no victory medal such as the Great War veterans received, but he couldn't give a reason. Surely the country could have done better. Why can't any veteran reach the age of 90 be honoured by some recognition such as a BEM? And that's A. Welsh, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
And finally, "When will we see action on bikers?" says Chris Waller, chairman of West Meon Parish Council. It's fine to see the blazing headline about motorbike speed, but when will long-suffering residents see action? Speed is not the only issue. Noise is. As your recent article said, some bikers have track exhausts which may not be road legal. This compounds the antisocial behaviour of the bikers, but also complicates the problem. Antisocial bikers in the Meon Valley can be seen as both a political and a judicial issue. It is judicial in that speeding is a criminal offence and should be dealt with by the police. However, in focusing mainly on reducing biker deaths, principally through education, some assert that the police have become complicit in the excessive noise from track exhausts and sensational speeding between the villages in the Meon Valley. Speed enforcement often seems to be concentrated in the villages where bikers don't speed, or on those days when the bikers don't go to Loomis for coffee and a chat. The police need to look at the excessive noise these powerful and modified bikes produce between the villages. Those that have been modified with track silencers, which may invalidate insurance, should be the focus of greater scrutiny. The noise is antisocial and is negatively affecting businesses that depend upon the quiet expected in the national park. Politicians can press for changed road layouts, removal of signage and white lines that allow bikers to drive to the limit of their machines, and for simplification of the myriad speed limits in the Meon Valley, for legislation and enforcement. Will the police be more proactive and seize these intimidating modified machines if they are not road legal? Other regions have achieved more by being smarter, more adaptive, and reflective of residents' needs. Bica education is a long-term goal. Reducing the blight of noise and speed on villages, businesses, and rural drivers of all ages and categories requires judicial and political will now. And that's from Chris Waller, Chairman of the West Meon Parish Council. And it wasn't finally, because we have one more letter.
Right, now this is a very short letter from Duncan Rutter, and it's headed Church Must Change Stance on Gays. Sir, last week Church of England churches in the Winchester area discussed how to reverse the fall in church membership, particularly among young people. At the same time, the church has just dismissed a priest in the Diocese of Southwell and Nottingham for having the temerity to exercise his legal right to marry his long-term same-sex partner. Unless and until the church deals with its institutional homophobia, there is little prospect of ever attracting young people who simply don't understand why the church has a problem with gay people. And that comes from Duncan Rutter, Bedfield Lane, Kingsworthy.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And perhaps you might like to write to them about the fact that again this week there is no historical, no 200 years, 100 years, which I think is an awful shame. But it looks as if they have taken it out completely. So we now go on to the editorial comment, Daphne.
Keep the Cattle Market car park. Will planners be making a huge mistake if they replace a popular edge-of-town car park with new homes and businesses? The town forum heard last week from residents living near the cattle market who believe they would. And they have a pretty convincing argument. The car park is earmarked for development as part of the massive revamp of the station approach area, stretching from the railway station to Andover Road. Several ideas have been suggested, including building offices and homes on the cattle market. Like any major town or city, Winchester promotes the use of public transport, cycling and walking as an alternative to the car. The city centre suffers from poor air pollution, one of the worst in Hampshire. Encouraging motorists to park on the edge of town makes sense. Furthermore, 2,000 new homes are to be built at Barton Farm, and the cattle market is the ideal place for those residents to park when venturing into town. The station approach plan is exciting and should be welcomed, but to get rid of the cattle market looks like it will be a huge mistake.
And then we're on to first person, please, with Brian.
Thank you. And first person this week is Khaled Aziz, who writes, "A sporting summer to savour, despite failings." What is it with sport? As we continue with what the Sun would no doubt describe as a soar away summer of sport, I'm increasingly wondering what it is that seems to move us beyond all reason to follow our chosen obsessions. Taking them in no particular order, let's try to bring some semblance of reason to bear. Cricket. It's not going well. The Sri Lankans are now sipping sundowners in candy, basking in the glory of their impressive series win. Our brave boys are now circling their wagons as the Indians approach. We, according to the public pundits, are building our team. There are a host of new young faces who, of course, rely on stability of the older guys. The trouble is, the youngsters are eclipsing the oldsters in performance. none more eclipsed than our beleaguered captain Alistair Cook. Batsmen do have dips in performance, just look at how long we've stuck with Ian Bell before he became good again. However, it's much tougher as captain and opening batsman if your score consistently fails to get beyond the teens. Logic dictates Cook should be spared from having to explain not only his, but his team's failures too. Let's see him rested from captaincy so he can concentrate on getting his batting back into gear. Football. Will England ever emerge again as a force to be reckoned with in the game they know we gave the world? Who knows? What we do know is that the sport is rotten like fish, from the head down. FIFA is an organisation, as an organisation, doesn't stand the scrutiny other large organisations have to bear. Granted, they're moving swiftly to ban the incisive Suarez for 4 months, thereby effectively denying his national team any realistic chance, but apparently his club Liverpool still has to pay him, even though they will be denying his cutting-edge services. Closer to home, loyal Southampton fans are in no doubt pondering the recent departure north of star players. The reason? Money, of course. Whether the transfer millions will translate into success for Saints remains to be seen. You can't help thinking that our national team can never succeed while Premiership cash dictates that the fans who blindly support teams populated by highly mobile players with no geographical connections are mere dupes, happy to shell out serious cash to watch the weekly antics of prima donnas. Tennis. As I write, we're approaching the Wimbledon quarter-finals. A glittering prize of £1.7 million awaits the men's champion. You get £27,000 just for qualifying. All hopes are on Mr. A. Murray, who seems to have acquired a personality since his early shaky start in the limelight. But he's there for is he there for England or Scotland? Thankfully, and wisely, he eschewed the chance of applying a regulation 1 centimetre tartan trim from his short trews, but Home Counties female followers flocking to the South West London site to see the brave boy defend his title had convinced themselves he's batting for them. Let's hope so. This was written before disaster hit.
Yes. Right.
Bulgarum, an alternative look at the news, has 3 items this week. Wedding guests see red as bride braves rain showers. A small crowd braved last Saturday's rain showers to watch wealthy divorce lawyer Aisha Vardag leave Winchester Cathedral, having just tied the knot for the second time. With brollies at the ready, they were rewarded by the sight of a bride in a flame-coloured frock and gold-bejewelled tiara, a groom sporting a large red rose in the buttonhole of his morning suit, plus a procession of well-heeled guests. Vardag, who is now honeymooning with new husband Stephen Bentz in the United States, has lived in Cathedral Close for the past 4 years. Her London-based family law firm, Vardag's, handles the breakups of some of the country's richest couples, while she is acclaimed for helping to make prenup agreements binding under English law. The 46-year-old has chewed traditional white for her second wedding dress, which, like her first, was sewn for her by her mother, Barbara. And then, new signs attract attention. You call that a signpost? This is a signpost. Business owners across the city might find local restrictions on advertising A-boards somewhat more lax after Hampshire County Council, with the City Council, decided to erect their new wayfinding signposts. The scheme, which cost £544,500, has been rolled out across Farnborough and Basingstoke, with plans to extend to Fareham, Eastleigh, Havant, Gosport and Totton. A total of 61 totem maps and 23 finger posts are to be installed by September 2014. The City Council's guidance on A-boards has, up until now, restricted businesses up and down the High Street from such advertising on the grounds that they were considered a trip hazard. How they respond when a tourist, so encompassed in their guide, desperately searching for the cathedral, walks straight into their near 7-foot vertical map. Perhaps less of a trip hazard and more of a watch-your-face hazard. And there's a picture of one of these, well, it's a large board, it's about 10 feet tall or something, with a digital map on it and two people looking at it. And the final one, English rose of many colours. An unusual flower has been spotted in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral. A rose, which has white, peach and dark pink petals, has been found growing near the historic building. It was noticed by the head gardener of Winchester College, Alan Smith, who posted the photo that's on here to a social networking site, Twitter, with the caption, "Winchester Cathedral Rose Unsure of Its Colour." Bicolouring in flowers occurs from random genetic abnormalities and is common in roses, tulips, aquilegia, camellia, dahlia, pergolonium and phlox. And there is a picture above of a white rose that looks as though it's blushing hard at the bottom. Now we come to what's on. And there's a lot going on in and around Winchester next week. Events at the Winchester Festival of the Arts are happening at several venues. Here are just a few, all of which, not all except one, are at the Guildhall. On Tuesday, July the 8th, there's Chris Packham's Wild Night Out at 7:30 p.m. On Wednesday, July the 9th, Dr. Anthony Seldon talks about public schools and the Great War. He's an author who wrote an original book challenging conventional views on public school ethos affected World War I. On Wednesday, also on Wednesday, July the 9th, that Dr. Anthony Seldon was at 6 p.m. And then at 8:30 p.m. you can listen to Jermaine Greer. And the talk is called The Disappearing Woman. And then on Thursday, July the 10th, Baroness Julia Neuberger is speaking. And on Friday, July the 11th, it's The Language of Love and War, Professors Chris Mulvey and Bill Lucas. It's called the English Project Lecture. That's at 6 p.m. So they are all happening at the Guildhall, and the telephone contact for booking for any of those is 01962 857 276. That's 01962 857 276. Now the Chesil Theatre is going open air for the first time with a production of The Three Musketeers in the garden of the Bishop's Palace. Performances are Tuesday the 8th to Saturday the 12th with a Saturday matinee. You need to bring a chair and you can bring a picnic. In the evenings, entrance is from 6 p.m. with the performance starting at 7:30. And at the matinee, you can lunch from 1 and the show is at 2:30. Tickets will be available on the door, costing £12 at all performances except Friday and Saturday evenings, when they're £15. There are discounts for the under 16s. On Thursday and Sunday, July the 10th and 13th, from 2 till 6 p.m, a group of gardens in Crawley are open. For £6, you can walk round the village and view them all. And there are plants for sale and teas in the village hall. And now, lighting up time. It ends today, the 4th of July, at 4:57 a.m. and begins again at 9:22 p.m. On Wednesday, the 9th of July, it ends at 5:01 a.m. and begins at 9:19 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we continue with further items of general news. Daphne?
Residents view future plans for their town. Exhibition shows how Alsford may grow over 17 years. There were mixed reactions as Alsford residents pored over plans for the town over the next 17 years. After mounting public pressure, Alsford Town Council hosted an exhibition last Friday and Saturday at the community centre, and the photograph shows people looking very closely at the plans. It detailed alternative housing options to the proposed Sun Lane site, which has attracted widespread opposition. Winchester City Council's local plan, Part 1, requires 500 homes to be built in Alsford between 2011 and 2031, and 386 of those are yet to be allocated. The alternative scheme could spread the development across sites to the west of New Farm Road and north of the Avenue. Industry would stay in the Dean instead of moving to Sun Lane. It also reduces the amount of open space, has no provision for a new burial ground, and would still include 150 houses at Sun Lane. Town Councillor Stuart McCulloch said, "There are mixed reactions. It's not an easy equation to find the answer to. Everybody realises there are lots of issues. There are two plans on the table, and the choice between them is not simple. People are taking it very seriously and making interesting comments." Carolyn Walker of Nursery Road said, "I think Sun Lane is going to go ahead anyway. The alternative plan has no access, so we are scuppered because there is too much traffic going through. Nursery Road is like the M25 already." Aaron Noether, also of Nursery Road, said, "I don't know how the school is going to cope with all those people." Whilst many had reservations about either proposal, others said Sun Lane was the logical choice. Sarah Badham, a Free Folk near Whitchurch, said, "My parents live in Albury Park. Sun Lane just seems to make sense. It has always been earmarked, and for as long as I can remember, people would say there is going to be building there. I think it's better, as long as they put in the things they say they are putting in. It seems better than there being houses here, there and everywhere." Colin Tester of Chestnut Walk said he disliked the stance of some town councillors. "There is an attitude that they are in charge and they know what is best for us. Why do they have to roll over just because Winchester City Council says they have got to do this?" On July the 18th, there will be a public meeting at Perrin School and residents will have the opportunity to comment.
Vicar is to become Basingstoke Bishop. Reverend Williams honoured to be consecrated in city. A Winchester vicar is set to become the new Bishop of Basingstoke, Downing Street has announced. The Reverend Canon David Williams, the current Vicar of Christ Church, will be ordained at a special service at Winchester Cathedral on September the 19th. He succeeds the Right Reverend Peter Hancock, now the Bishop of Bath and Wells. Reverend Williams has served in the diocese for the past 13 years, working closely with numerous bodies including the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester Prison and the University. "Knowing the diocese as I do, I will, I'm sure, be invaluable in my new role," he said. "Over the past 13 years, I've grown to know and love the people, the churches and the communities in this area. Over that time, I've met some really inspiring clergy and enjoyed working with many organisations doing great things and changing people's lives. I want to build in that in this new role." Taking on this role comes with a huge responsibility, North Hampshire embraces many diverse and unique communities, both urban and rural. Myself and Helen are really looking forward to this new chapter in our lives. Reverend Williams grew up in East Africa. After finishing university, he worked for the Church Mission Society in eastern Kenya, where he was deputy head teacher of a village secondary school and built close links with the Anglican Church in Uganda and Sudan. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, the Bishop of Winchester, said, "I'm absolutely delighted that David has been appointed to serve in this way with the diocese. His work over the past 13 years, his understanding of the challenges and strengths of the local church, and the relationships he's forged both in Winchester and across the diocese, means he's well fitted for the task." Reverend Williams' consecration as Bishop of Basingstoke will take place at Winchester Cathedral, the first in the city for many years. Reverend Williams said the service would mean a lot to him. "Having the consecration ceremony within the diocese means a great deal," he added. "Winchester Diocese is our home, so it would be a great honour to be consecrated in our own cathedral, surrounded by the community, our friends and family. I want to ensure that everybody, that it will be an event that everybody can enjoy."
Public should have another chance to see Silver Hill plans. Residents should find out more before crucial planning meetings, says Town Forum. Winchester City Councillors want another public exhibition of the Silver Hill plans before a crucial decision is made next week on allowing the developer to submit a new planning application. Developer Henderson wants to alter the scheme given approval in 2009, and the Cabinet next Thursday, July the 10th, is due to decide on whether to let the application be made. Henderson controversially proposes to cut out any affordable housing, shelve a new bus station, and increase the number of shops. But councillors at the Town Forum last Wednesday voted that there should be another exhibition and a debate at a full meeting of council. There was cross-party support for a resolution by Councillor Martin Todd. Councillor Todd said, "I'm concerned we could end up having a cabinet meeting without the public having had the chance to consider the final proposals." There was a two-day public consultation in March, but it was arranged at short notice, with many interested people unaware, it is claimed. Councillor Kim Gottlieb recently started a campaign, "Winchester Deserves Better," to reduce the size of the £150 million scheme. The main building will be six or seven stories tall. Corporate Director Steve Tilbury said the Cabinet decision was the Council acting only as a landowner and will not affect the Council's later planning decision. "There are two separate decisions," he said. "There will be public consultation as part of the planning application." Councillor Robert Sanders said next week's cabinet was crucial. He said if it gave permission to Henderson to submit a new application, the council gives up a position of strength. "The council has absolute discretion to say you cannot do that. If Henderson say we don't want a bus station, we can say we do want a bus station. They don't want affordable housing. We do want affordable housing." New images show more of the scheme, including the demolition of one side of historic Cross Keys Passage, an alleyway dating back to the Middle Ages. Councillor Gottlieb's website has had more than 2,500 unique users in recent weeks and been hacked. Oh, no, sorry, not hacked, backed. Backed by 250 people, he said. He said July the 10th is the last chance for the council to have influence. "The way the contract is drafted, the council now has the upper hand and great leverage, which it can use to improve its position and to effect substantial changes of its choice," he said. "The moment the council gives Henderson permission to submit a planning application, all this negotiating strength will be surrendered. Samson will have lost all his hair. The City Council can and must completely revise the Silver Hill development proposal or face destroying an historic city centre forever. I'm not exaggerating the possible calamitous for effects. But the council disputes Councillor Gottlieb's interpretation and says the changes are sensible updates. Councillor Vicky Weston, Deputy City Council leader, said, "I cannot agree with those who say Winchester deserves better. I say that Winchester deserves the best, and this is the best. Best for the local economy, best for Winchester people, and best for replacing an eyesore with an eye-catching addition to our beautiful city." Councillor Gottlieb, himself a developer, says he is also worried no affordable housing may be built elsewhere as part of the scheme. The number is dependent on rising values over the course of the development.
Scholarships in America are up for grabs. Winchester Rotary has announced further funding opportunities for a scholarship programme in the USA. Students have been invited to apply for the Georgia Rotary Scholarship Programme to study for a year at one of 30 colleges and universities within the state, after two Peter Simmons College students were already awarded. Anya Griffin from Alsford and David Shaw from Basingstoke will be leaving in August. Applicants must be aged between 18 and 25 and cannot be older than 25 by August 1, 2015. They will be required to live on campus and will be provided with hall accommodation, meals and tuition. There will be support from the local Rotary Club host families. The scholarship does not cover the cost of flights or medical insurance. A meeting will be held at Peter Simmons College on Tuesday to provide more information, and all names need to be sent to Dennis Wellstead, Scholarship Counsellor, by tomorrow. Well, presumably that's today, Friday.
Yes.
And for more information, email Mr. Wellstead at djwellstead@btinternet.com.
Well, that's a bit late.
Chesil car park decision to be decided. A Winchester car park is moving closer to being redeveloped for housing for the elderly. The City Council wants to build a 50-flat extra care scheme on the Chesil Street surface car park. Councillors on the Housing Committee, who meet next Wednesday, July the 9th, are being asked to confirm it as their preferred site. But residents and businesses, including the East Winchester Social Club and Black Boy / Black Rat establishments, are strongly opposed to the loss of the spaces. The council argues that the Chesil Street multi-storey is underused and can absorb the extra cars from the surface car park. Councillor Steve Miller, portfolio holder for business services, which includes new homes delivery, said, "There is an ageing population in Winchester, and the council is committed to ensuring that older people have a choice of accommodation to meet their needs. Extra care flats, individual flats with communal facilities where care and support can be provided to occupiers, are one of the best ways in which this can be achieved. If the committee agrees the recommendation, officers will develop detailed proposals for a formal planned application and consider further issues raised during the consultation so far. These include the height of the building being sympathetic to the area, replacement of lost Barfield close permit holding car park spaces, and a new footway between Barfield Close and the multi-storey car park to provide a safer route to the town centre via the shop mobility trail. The councillor says it's addressing other issues such as making Chesil Street multi-storey more attractive with better internal decoration, CCTV and new lighting.
Kingsworthy wacky races. Forget Penelope Pitstop. Excuse me. Last weekend was the turn of Winchester residents to race their own go-karts, writes Charlotte Neal. The Wacky Races event on Sunday saw adrenaline junkies race their homemade, non-powered go-karts at Rees Hill, opposite the King Charles Pub in Kingsworthy. It was put on by local charity A Better Life, which works with people in the UK and Mongolia who are in troubled circumstances. The event has been running for 6 years, and this year smashed all records, with 128 races in 18 different categories, and just as many trophies up for grabs. Prizes were awarded for fastest time of the day, wackiest creation, and best technical design, amongst others, with the trophy presentation at the King Charles Pub. One of the organisers, Lee McQueen, said, "It was absolutely fantastic. We've had so many emails and messages saying thank you and sending donations online. Well, we've never had that after the race before." She added, "It was just a really lovely event, with children as young as 3 all the way up to their grandparents taking part, even teenagers. We raised £2,303.15, which is the most we've ever made. We are over the moon, really happy." Last year saw the introduction of a new category specifically designed for children with additional needs, which was carried on this time around with specially designed go-karts. The winner of the overall fastest time of the day went to Pink Panther, designed and built by Thomas Hastie, 13, and driven by William Warwick Smith, 12, who soared down the 250-metre track in just 11.86 seconds. And there are photographs of all the watchers are sort of sitting on hay bales and things at the side in the field, and a very smart looking white go-kart, and also a very, very basic one, and it looks as though somebody's just about to fall off it. But they had a lovely day for it.
Second wind farm rejected. Hampshire wind farm developers suffered a second blow in a week with the rejection of a scheme north of Winchester. TCI Renewables planned 6 130-metre-high turbines in Woodmancote Down near Popham. But the planning committee at Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council voted 8-4 to reject the plan last Wednesday. TCI Renewables is expected to appeal. Jonathan Mosley of campaign group SOS Hampshire Downs said, "This is a victory for our priceless rolling Hampshire downland, local people and common sense. Our downlands are not renewable." He added, "Unfortunately, the possibility of an appeal by TCI Renewables remains, and we have to be ready to face that if it comes. However, we believe the reasons for refusal are sufficiently strong and numerous to give us every chance of success at appeal." The rejection comes after a larger 14-turbine wind farm at Bullington Cross was rejected by planning committees at Winchester, Basingstoke and Test Valley councils. A TCI Renewables spokesman said, "Hampshire has no wind farms, and Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council has sent the message that despite all their policy statements to the contrary, they simply do not want them. Not only have they refused planning permission for the Woodmancote Down wind farm, which would have provided enough renewable electricity for nearly 11,000 homes and displaced some 20,000 tonnes of the greenhouse gas carbon dioxide annually, only last month, along with the neighbouring local authorities of Test Valley and Winchester, they also refused permission for EDF's 14-turbine Bullington Cross scheme. TCI will review the precise reasons for refusal once the council's decision notice has been received before deciding how best to proceed."
Work begins on hospice renovations. Milestone for Naomi House. Works to improve a children's hospice near Winchester have begun following successful fundraising. Naomi House and Jack's Place at Sutton Scotney welcomed builders, plumbers and electricians to begin the £4 million construction, which will see the site transformed. Patron of the appeal, Alistair Stewart, and the chairman, David Holmes, welcomed Kevin Hayter, director of Romsey firm Reside Construction, to the site, which provides care for children with life-limiting conditions. The keys to the centre were passed over in a brief ceremony before the renovation works. The first in the charity's 17-year history began. Deputy Chief Executive Mark Smith said, "Today marks a major milestone in the history of Naomi House, and we're delighted that major building work can now begin on site. We're particularly pleased to have been able to appoint a local firm, Reside Constructions, to undertake the work and to look forward to seeing the first children and families enjoying our brand new hospice in less than a year. Of course, we couldn't have reached this stage without the support of individuals, groups and businesses across Hampshire, but we still need more help to reach our target of £4 million to complete the project. The centre's bedrooms will be made larger by approximately a third, and there will be piped oxygen into the rooms for the first time. There will also be a messy play area, arts and crafts, and new bereavement area for families. There will also be a new kitchen and dining area, and a bridge joining the centres, as well as a spiritual and multi-faith area. It's hoped the centre will be ready for use next summer."
Care home rated one of the best. A care home in Winchester has been commended as one of the top homes in the South East. I'm sorry, I keep on getting frock. Takefield House in Chilbolton Avenue came 16th of 3,304 homes, according to online recommendations registered on the website carehome.co.uk. Director of carehome.co.uk, Davina Ludlow, said, "We felt the best people to rate a care home were the people who really know its ins and outs, its residents and their families. Takefield House Care Home has proved that it provides a great service, and we'd like to congratulate them on being a top recommended home in the South East. It's a brilliant achievement to be recognised for your hard work, but particularly from the people who you work hard for. The care home will be recognised on our website as a top-rated home and will receive a certificate from us." Manager of Takefield House, Shirley Bartlett, said, "Having just celebrated our 10th anniversary of being part of the Hartford Care Group, this really is the icing on the cake. It is particularly special as the award is based on personal recommendations from our residents and their friends and families."
Nurse struck off after patient affair. Nurse manipulated suicidal teen's vulnerability. A nurse who began a sexual relationship with a suicidal teenager just days after she was discharged from hospital has been struck off. Thomas Sims exchanged sexually charged Facebook messages with a 17-year-old after caring for her at the McGill Acute Admittance Ward at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Sims invited the girl, referred to as Patient A, ice skating and to the cinema before he began taking her to his home. On the fourth occasion she visited his home, they had sex, the Nursing and Midwifery Council, NMC, heard. The former patient finally contacted Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust several months after the relationship ended. The NMC disciplinary panel found he engaged in an inappropriate and sexual relationship with patient A and had sex with her without her consent between March and April 2012. NMC panel chairman Robin Somerville said, "The panel is in no doubt that Mr. Sims breached the hospital's code of conduct and that his actions were morally questionable. The panel reminded itself of its duty to protect the public and the public interest. Mr. Sims put patient A at unwarranted risk and harm. He was an experienced practice nurse and might have known of patient A's condition and vulnerability. He manipulated her vulnerability and persisted in contacting her in a way that might have been premeditated. This has undoubtedly brought the profession into disrepute. The very nature of a nurse's job places them in a position of privilege and responsibility, and they are expected to uphold their integrity in all situations. The need for all nurses to maintain clear boundaries between themselves and patients is clear. There was manipulation and abuse involved in Mr. Sims' relationship with patient A. Although he admits being naturally cheeky and flirty, this is not appropriate in such a position. Sims was sacked from his job after an investigation, the hearing was told. Police also launched an inquiry, but no charges were ever brought.
Students fly in for night shelter spring clean. Royal Air Force students from Worthy Down gave their time to help out at a Winchester charity. 16 students from the base went along to the Winchester Church's night shelter to give it a spring clean. And it's, there's a picture left, I'll tell you in a minute. Half the students reported on the shelter on an evening and cleaned the kitchen, dining room and laundry room, with the other half reporting the next evening to clean the corridors, communal room, hot drinks area and quiet room. The students are required to take part in a charity event as part of the Service International Personnel Administration course at Worthy Down. In the past, students have organised bake sales, race nights and sponsored fitness endurance challenges. And there's a group of smiling students in their army dress, or Air Force dress in this case, with brushes and brooms and goodness knows what else. So a very good job.
Would-be MP's maternity pledge. Prospective Liberal Democrat MP Jackie Porter has expressed deep concern that maternity services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester are under threat. Mrs. Porter said, "I am deeply concerned by these proposals to downgrade maternity services. I understand how important a maternity unit with consultant care is. When I was giving birth to my son, I experienced complications and needed a blood transfusion. Having doctors on hand rescued a critical situation. I will be campaigning strongly to stop this downgrading of our local NHS services." A review of hospital services includes a proposal to downgrade the current maternity unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The current unit has full consultant cover, but the proposed changes would mean Winchester losing this and the unit becoming midwife-led.
England may have crashed out of the World Cup, but that didn't dampen villagers' spirits as they celebrated their annual summer fete, Brazilian style. On Saturday, John Keeble Primary School hosted the Hursley Village Fete with a World Cup street carnival theme. Patriotic bunting lined every building along Main Road. Dancers took to the centre to perform a samba, and the traditional chocolate custard eating contest was held in the afternoon. Southampton Football Club mascot Sammy Saint popped in, and there was entertainment by Stilt Walkers Circus Sensible, as well as plate spinning, juggling, diabolo and hula hooping. Anne Ramsdale of the organising committee said, "It's a whole community event between the school, church and village. The weather was gorgeous in the morning, and then as soon as we set up, it rained. When we started, though, the rain stopped." She added, "It was fantastic. We had so many people come along, help out and donate stuff, and about 80 volunteers. The proceeds will be split 60-40 between the school and All Saints Church. And there are some wonderful pictures of a little girl on a climbing wall, a couple of chaps enjoying a pint in front of a steam tractor, 1920. Head teacher Rob Sanders being soaked with wet sponges thrown at him. Bouncy castle and a little girl walking across Circus Sensible's tightrope."
Well, this is the period of outside celebrations, and it seems some are happy and have good weather and others don't. Here's one that didn't, showing the bulldog spirit at fate. Pinnies, head cards, scarves and vintage summer dresses were the name of the game at Colden Common Summer Fete. Organised by the Colden Common Community Association, the day's theme was 1914 to 2014 to commemorate the start of World War I, which saw all manner of polka dot, frilly aprons and decorative bunting. The guest speaker for the day was D-Day veteran 91-year-old Jim Bramley, who landed on Juno Beach. He served as a Lance Corporal with the Royal Army Service Corps and was a dispatch rider carrying messages and reports to and from the beaches. Mr. Bramley, a local resident, recently returned to Normandy with his wife Iris where he first landed on June 6, 1944. Together they judged the stalls and awarded the winner of the Daphne Brand Cup to the woman stall runners Sarah Banks, Sue Beck, Marion Stephan, Carol Allen, Pat Badham, Margaret Davis and Sue Fitzpatrick. The organiser, Maureen Rees, said, "Despite the rain, it all went really well, and I'm really grateful to the volunteers who offered to help out. Even the entertainers managed to struggle through with their bits and pieces, and the band was fantastic. Despite the sudden downpour, the Thorndon Community Wind Band played well into the afternoon, while the Spirit Band Twirlers and cast from the Firefly Theatre entertained the villagers. Local singer Lee Ikafa led a sing-along with some wartime classics, and there's a picture of the D-Day veteran and two ladies, and a lot of ladies in their pinafores, which seemed to be the thing of the time, as I remember it."
Night bus service to carry on. Winchester civic chiefs have confirmed their backing for a night bus service. City councillors on the town forum last Wednesday decided to fund the service for another 2 years, starting from September. The service runs from the city centre to Badger Farm, Stanmore, Week and Hairstock on Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays between around 10 p.m. and 12:30 a.m. Started in 2012, the schedule has been tweaked to better coincide with the trains. Labour and Liberal Democrat councillors voted to approve the £13,000 subsidy, but Conservatives opposed, saying it was a county council role to support public transport. A possible threat is the county council review of its subsidies due to conclude by the end of October, the forum heard. If other services are stopped that could hit the viability of the night service, said Simon Finch, Assistant Director, Built Environment. Tory councillor Fiona Mather asked why the forum, which covers the six city wards, was supporting a service when parish councils in Hairstock and Badger Farm had refused. Lib Dem councillor Jim Maynard said the service needed better promotion.
School celebrates new facilities. There was cause for triple celebrations at a Winchester special school as it opened new facilities. Osborne School in Andover Road launched their new cafe on Monday of last week to aid vocational learning for its 138 pupils. With the help of pupil Max Andrew, 12, it has been named CLAF, a class in a cafe. And with the help of artist Michelle Buell-Nielsen, the pupils put together a mural for the wall. It is hoped the produce grown in the Horticultural Centre can be used in the cafe. The launch coincided with Sports Day, which included New Age curling, seated volleyball, obstacle course, golf and traditional races, and saw 60 families attend. Friends of Osborne School have been raising money for a new classroom, which was also opened last week. Head teacher Sonia O'Donnell said it was the perfect time for a triple celebration. "It was a really lovely day and an ideal opportunity to focus on what we do here," she said. "The Friends of Osborne School were here helping in the cafe, and we opened the outdoor classroom that the Friends have raised funds for. Parents came for sports day and had picnics on the field with pupils. And because we had an audience, we took the chance to open the two facilities."
Soldier's badge is at home in museum. A cap badge of a soldier killed in 1944 has been donated to the Winchester Regimental Museum by his son, whom he never knew. David Hope Daly was born 3 months after his father was killed, serving with the Hampshire Regiment in Holland in October 1944. Mr. Hope Daly said he was pleased that the Royal Hampshire Regiment was accepting the simple Bakelite badge. He told the Chronicle last Friday, "I'm delighted and have been honoured to have been asked to give this to the regiment. My father was part of the battalion, and I thought its resting place should be here." Mr. Hope Daly, 69, theatrical agent from London, added, "It's fascinating. I found out so much about my father. I didn't know anything about him. I'm intending to go to Arnhem for a reunion." Lieutenant Alex Hope, 28, was killed leading his platoon over a dike in Operation Garden, part of the offensive that saw the parachute regiment drop at Arnhem. Lieutenant Hope was serving with the Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire Regiment and was posted to 7th Battalion, the Hampshire Regiment. He was buried in the field, but its location was lost that winter. It lay undiscovered before building work revealed it in 1984. He was interred at Groesbeek Canadian War Cemetery. The Dutch Army offered the badge to Graham Francis, a former member of the regiment, who contacted the museum, which in turn tracked down Mr. Hope Daly. In a brief presentation at the museum at Searle's House in Winchester, Mr. Francis handed it to Mr. Hope Daly, who passed it to Brigadier Tim Glass, the chairman of the trustees of the Royal Hampshire Regiment Trust. Also at the presentation was Henry Leach, who served on the campaign aged 19 and was injured 2 days after Lieutenant Hope's death. Mr. Leach, 88, of Yardley Road, Hedge End, said, "The badge on its own doesn't mean a thing. They are 10 a penny. It's the story of what happened to the soldier that wore it. That means something." Major Ian Taylor, a trustee of the Royal Hampshire Regiment Trust, said, "The badge is the symbol of the regiment. It's now come home." And there's a picture of the three people, Graham Francis, David Hope Daly and Brigadier Tim Glass, pictured outside the museum holding the badge, and a picture of Lieutenant Hope.
End of term showcase puts students in spotlight. Artistic youngsters from across Hampshire got the chance to showcase their work as part of a series of end of term events. Winchester School of Art transformed the campus in Park Avenue and threw open its doors to the public to show off the huge range of final year works from students across fine art, fashion and textile design, fashion marketing and graphic arts. The annual event offers hundreds of graduating students from around the world the opportunity to shine a light on the thought-provoking creations. Head of school, Ed D'Souza, said, "The summer degree show is more than just a celebration of the end of student study at WSA. It is also an important showcase of talent that has been nurtured and developed over the last 3 years. And there are photographs of all young women standing beside their creations, which one is a metal sculpture and the others are clothes, or it looks like a very modern looking rain coat."
Ex-canon dies, aged 83. Former Winchester canon residentiary, the Very Reverend Alexander Wedderspoon, has died, aged 83. He served at the cathedral for 17 years before becoming Dean of Guildford in 1987. During his time at Winchester, the Reverend Wedderspoon, the son of a Church of Scotland minister, proved himself an adept and foresighted treasurer. He was the driving force behind the opening of the pastoral and educational centres in the Close, and eventually became the chairman of the National Cathedral's Finance Committee. He retired in 2001 and lived in Cranley until his death on June the 10th. His funeral was held at Guildford Cathedral last week. He is by his wife Judith, daughter Caroline and son Michael.
Celebration of Cycling returns to Winchester. A cycling challenge through the heart of Winchester has been officially launched. The Winchester Criterium is returning to the city for the second year running, with 7 closed circuit races featuring up to 300 competitive riders. 2 new categories have been added: Cycle Fest, a family ride, and a challenge for corporate teams. Crowds of 10,000 are expected to line the 1 kilometre circuit on Sunday, August the 17th. The event was launched by event director Mark Sandemas, leader of the Winchester City Council, Rob Humby and MP Steve Bryan, who also vice chairman of the all-party parliamentary cycling group. He said this event is now rightly a permanent fixture in the Winchester summer events. In addition to it being yet another positive presentation of cycling, it's something totally different and can only be a strength for the city in terms of attracting visitors and providing a fun yet totally free family day out. The event is organised by Pennine Events in partnership with Winchester City Council, and there's a group of people with Councillor Rob Humby, leader of the council, Councillor Vicky Weston, deputy leader, MP Steve Bryan, and Ruth Crawford of Pennine Events. And they're joined by My Journey Hampshire mascot at the launch of Winchester Criterium. It's a sort of extraordinary looking thing. I don't know whether it's a bird or what it is. There we are.
Charity celebrates windfall. Winchester-based charity Fixers has been awarded £154,000 by the Queen's Trust. The money will help 245 young people take action on subjects they feel strongly about. Fixers, based in St Thomas's Street, has already supported more than 12,500 young people aged 16 to 25 across the UK to tackle any issue that matters to them, however they choose. Margot Horsley, Chief Executive of Fixers, said, "We are delighted to be working with the Queen's Trust because we share the confidence that young people know what matters and know how to effect change. This project is about young people deciding what needs fixing and then having the freedom to fix it in a way which is meaningful to them and to the communities in which they live. Projects have included cyberbullying, unemployment, young offending, rape prevention, and mental health." The Queen's Trust Director, Nicola Brentnall, said, "Young people are responding in great numbers to the Fixers proposition. It shows how motivated they can be when it comes to addressing issues which are dear to their heart. The Fixers proposition is very open, engaging young people in a way which allows them to tackle all sorts of problems. Fixers aims to work with more than 70,000 young people aged 16 to 25 by 2020.
Battle of Cheriton, history brought to life. A historic battle near Alresford was brought to life last weekend as two county groups came together, writes Charlotte Neal. The Battle of Cheriton project teamed up with Hampshire Royal British Legion to stage a 2-day event in memory of the 1644 clash between Roundheads and Cavaliers. History through the ages brought arena displays, military encampments, entertainment, stalls and reenactments of the battle, which was fought in fields a short distance from the showground at Scrubs Farm near the village. Organisers hailed it a roaring success, despite Saturday's torrential rain, which meant the programme was called off an hour early. Chairman of the organising committee, Gillian Grey Knight, said, "The show provided by the various reenactment groups was impressive and really slick. It provided tremendous entertainment for the public. We were particularly impressed by the support we received from groups of young people, particularly the 14th Eastleigh Scout and Guide Band, the young farmers who managed our car parking arrangements, and members of the Army Cadet Force from Borden, who acted as arena marshals and stewards. County officials, Poppy Appeal fundraisers, members from the RBL Women's Section and the Riders Branch were all found in the Legion's marquee. The World War II trench walks, conducted by Airborne Division reenactors, proved popular, and on Sunday, one tour saw 200 people visit the forward observation trench, watch a medical officer and padre attending a severely injured soldier in the medical area before a gun crew strafed the enemy from their dugout. 200 members of the Sealed Knot reenacted the English Civil War battle on both days, and on Sunday they held a grand parade and commemorative service. Reenactors representing the Union and Confederate armies of the American Civil War brought the event to a thrilling but noisy finish, with their musket fire crackling across the showground. Any profits will help fund an archaeological dig at the historic battlefield site and swell the RBL's Poppy Appeal Fund. And there are some splendid photographs of people in historic costumes with muskets, marching, fighting on horseback with sabres, foot soldiers with bayonets, and a little boy, Nathaniel Pettifer of 3, with a little shield and wooden sword.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Laura Chorley and Michael Turner. Thanks to the copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And Dave Brian Woodruff.
Bye.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye, and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.